Good evening. A historic day at Stormont. After 2 years of talks and after a generation of bloodshed and decades of division and acrimony, George Mitchell ushers in what the whole island hopes will be a new era of peace. An agreement that unites loyalist and republican, unionist and nationalist leaders in a wide-ranging historical accord.
The two prime ministers emerged just before six this evening to inaugurate the historic agreement they hope will usher in a new era for the island. There was praise for the Taoiseach and for the parties from Tony Blair, who paid tribute to all who had lost their lives in the conflict, suggesting that the nature of today's deal would change relationships in Northern Ireland forever.
The principle of consent is absolute and is throughout the agreement. And the breakthrough is that that is now accepted by all, North and South. Also, those who believe in a united Ireland can make that case now by persuasion, not violence or threats.
A view echoed by the Taoiseach.
My ultimate political aspiration remains the coming together of all the people of Ireland, achieved peacefully and by consent. I value deeply the close relationship between the Irish government and the British government. But I look forward equally to a new era of friendship and reconciliation between unionists and nationalists, in which each tradition can learn truly the value of the other.
There you go. That's the news report from the day in question. The delivery, the agreement, the Good Friday peace deal, which we've been operating off really in one form or another for the last 25 years. If you've a view on that time, on that day, what has happened in the last 25 years, where you think things are now for the island of Ireland in terms of the peace process, we want to hear your thoughts this morning on that. And what sort of an achievement do you view it as now, given the relative peace that we've had ever since? People in Tralee are asked about their views on the Good Friday Agreement. Students from the Kerry College course in digital journalism, podcasting, and radio went out in the streets. In a few moments, we'll be speaking to one of those who was party to that agreement. That's former Sinn Féin Deputy Martin Ferris. But here's what people feel now about Good Friday.
I can remember it happening, you know, and I knew that the challenge of those assembling in the room was mighty. And the relief that it brought both to myself and to our nation, both North, South and in the United Kingdom. It was almost miraculous what happened.
Oh, a big difference, quite a big difference. We wouldn't have, the freedom of things to do, things, travel places and all that, things happening to people, you know?
Yeah, it's not perfect. The hatred between the two communities are up there is so deep. We can't scarce understand it here, you know. We have our differences and squabbles, but that sort of hatred that runs, you know, across generations, across centuries, anything that could call a halt to that or even ameliorate it, you know, yes, it was an amazing piece of work.
Many people lost their loved ones, both sides. For what? Let's hope peace comes.
Oh yeah, I think it has made a massive difference, a colossal difference. You know, prior to 1998, so many people had lost their lives. I suppose going back the best part of 30 years, about 3,500 people, which was, you know, just such a tragedy. And since then, very, very few people have lost their lives. And, you know, things are so calm and peaceful there, you know, for the most part. And it's great, you know, for the people in their 20s now, or even maybe up towards the age of 30, who have no memory whatsoever of the troubles. Like, I'd be old enough now to remember, you know, on a daily basis you'd be hearing of incident after incident up there, and you know, it was just a terrible time prior to the Good Friday Agreement. And fair play to those, you know, who worked to bring it about.
A great thing to see Ian Paisley and Jerry Adams standing side by side laughing.
Standing side by side laughing. There you go. That's some of the people in the streets of Tralee with their views on where things stand now and their memories of the time. With me in our studio in Tralee, I have one of those who was part of the negotiating team for Sinn Féin. That's former Sinn Féin Deputy Martin Ferris. Martin, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gerry.
How do you view it now, these years on?
I think it has stood the test of time. It was a historic agreement on that day. It was coming together of two different traditions, putting an end to the violence that had preceded it, the war, as I would call it. And I believe very early on during the implementation of it that the process was going to be irreversible. and that it's 25 years on now. There's still some distance to go. He's not realised the ultimate objectives for Irish republicanism as of yet, but I've no doubt it will. I think that the very fact that people from both traditions, political traditions, are able to speak to each other. You must remember back in 1997 when the first ceasefire came in, when they went to South Africa, both Republicans and Unions went to South Africa, Unionism wouldn't come into the same room as Republicans. So it has improved quite hugely, I think. It's beyond all our expectations. And I think it argues very well for the future, particularly young people who have grown up in an era where there has been a symbol of equality, which wasn't there for before that. There is also, they have grown up in relatively peaceful period. And long may it continue. I have no doubt that it will lead to an inevitable agreed Ireland where unionism, nationalism, republicans can all work and live together for the common good.
Martin, did you ever think it would happen?
Well, I was always, I'm an optimist by nature, and I always believed that there would be a resolution to this. I suppose if you asked me this in the early 70s when I was in Portlaoise prison in the 70s and on the run prior to that, I would have thought that we would have been capable of forcing the British out of the six counties. And, it's over a period of time I realised that it wasn't possible. There had to be a negotiated settlement. Unfortunately, Republicans were kept outside the tent in any type of talks or negotiations. And eventually, when the British government realised that it wasn't possible to defeat the IRA realised it wasn't possible to defeat the British forces on the ground, a negotiated settlement became inevitable. And thankfully, the coming together of very, very prominent people that will be fondly remembered in history, the likes of Bill Clinton in America, Tony Blair in the UK, Bertie Ahern and Albert Reynolds prior to him in our country, David Trimble. I'd have to give credit to David Trimble as well. And from a Republican perspective, two great Republican leaders, Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams. And all those ponderables coming together under the chairmanship of George Mitchell created a framework and a talk framework whereby all our concerns and our expectations and aspirations could be realised. And I think that's what was the outcome of it. And it's a tremendous testimony to everybody who lived during that period and all who contributed to a lasting peace, as I see it.
Yeah, we're going to talk a bit more about the deal itself and what it means and maybe why it has worked the way it has worked. Martin, if you have a view and your own thoughts of 25 years ago, it was actually April 10th when it was delivered, but most people associated with the Good Friday Agreement. We want to hear from you. We're talking with Martin Ferris about the Good Friday peace deal 25 years on. We'll have more with him after we take these. Yeah, keep your comments and views coming into us on the show on 0667123666. We're talking with former Sinn Féin Deputy Martin Ferris, who was part of the Sinn Féin negotiation team 25 years ago that had delivered the Good Friday peace deal. And Martin, just on that, Tony Blair was talking about the issue of consent being right throughout the agreement, and also the fact that those who believe in United Ireland now had their way of trying to get to it through persuasion rather than violence. Were those the crucial issues in the talks? You mentioned there Gerry Adams, Martin McGuinness, you mentioned David Trimble. Everyone going into that meeting and that deal had serious risks. They were taking serious risks, and everybody probably on either side knew that they were going to lose people. Or maybe was it a case you were trying to bring as many people with you to where you knew you probably needed to go, as difficult and all as that was?
Yes, and from a Republican perspective, I was very much guided by one person I knew who's now passed on, Brian Keenan. And during that period, I had consultations with Brian. Brian always said, he says, remember one thing, he says, movements don't split, leaders fall out. And the leadership of Sinn Féin, and I would imagine from the IRA as well, were very committed to finding a resolution to the conflict. And that was why you didn't have any split in republicanism, in my opinion. A few left, but they didn't have any effect on the overall movement. regarding the Ulster Unionist Party, they had a very difficult time because you had Paisley outside the framework and he was trying to bring it down. The Irish government, Bertie Ahern, well, I think he had full support when right across his own party and certainly across the political spectrum. And I think the British government were weary and wanted a resolution. And I don't think there was any difficulties for Blair in that regard. And again, the input of Irish America through Bill Clinton, all of that had a huge impact in focusing both governments, as well as every other party to it, in finding a resolution. And thankfully, that was the outcome of it. We must also look at the Loyalist leaders, the likes of Billy Hutchinson and David Irvine, who I found extremely helpful in the last hours of the negotiation, particularly around the prisoners. And they were extremely helpful, and we built up a relationship, which I think, if you look at the Jenny Johnson, when David Irvine, his wife, and
I remember coming down several times, supporting that project.
And we had a drink together in the West End in Phoenix, and it was, it just showed like that even people who would consider each other enemies for a long period of our life, and obviously would probably had the opportunity, would have shot each other, we were able to sit down and have that kind of a conversation. And all that came out of building a kind of a relationship, a negotiating relationship in the lead up to the Good Friday Agreement, and it continued onwards, and it still is to this day in Flashpoint areas and in Belfast in particular, where you have members of Billy Hutchinson's party and members of Sinn Féin and the front line trying to ensure that the rioting would not spread, trying to ensure that in the seasonal marches that they're not as contentious as they used to be.
Yeah.
And all of that is an element of how the whole thing has progressed and continues to progress.
Yeah, is it the ultimate testament to the deal that despite the fact that the Ulster Unionist Party were outside shouting in and giving out about it, ultimately Ian Paisley joined in and became First Minister?
I think, you see, Ian Paisley ideologically was a devolutionist and was always that way. But he was in contest with the Ulster Unionist Party.
There was an internal power struggle there
so
the politics came into it, as it always does.
Yeah, and it was a shameful, really, because the DUP, what they tried to do was try to scupper that agreement even before we could get there. And they embraced it afterwards. And if it had succeeded, it would have set us back another generation, maybe another 10, 15 years.
Did it come close to that, Martin? Falling apart and falling back into violence for another 4 or 5 years?
I like to look at things in a different light. I like to think, I always thought that once we sat down and got, once we sat across the table from each other and respected each other's position, and we're prepared to debate it and talk about it and try and find a resolution, that it was going to become irreversible. Paisley outside the tent at that time created a big problem for unionism, in particular for David Trimble. And
yeah.
I suppose we have to, like, I've seen read about a lovely interview that Gerry Adams done regarding David Trimble and how he comes to recognise the road that he had travelled. And, we all travelled a distance, but he travelled quite a distance as well, and that has to be respected and admired.
Yeah, he had to face down internal opposition and external opposition within unionism. A number of people getting in touch with us this morning. Good morning, Jerry. For me, the greatest Irishman ever will be John Hume. God rest him. No peace only for him, says Sean. Alan says, I'd be worried about the new IRA, Jerry. They mean business, and I think it's only a matter of time before they cause trouble. They don't want peace. Some of them are sons that saw their fathers killed during the Troubles. Now they're back for revenge. And Martin Ferris gave his adult life for free Ireland, sacrificing family and friends. He educated himself while incarcerated and moved the Times to be an essential part of the Good Friday Agreement. Well done, Martin. Some of those views there. John Hume's role, Martin, what's your take on that 25 years on, the legacy of what he did with the SDLP?
Well, when I asked to come on here this morning, I just looked back on notes that I had acquired over the years. And my first notes I had go back to 1988, when the SDLP and Sinn Féin met to try and form what they called a pan-nationalist approach to the conflict. And that soon collapsed pretty quickly. But John Hume kept in touch with Gerry Adams and vice versa. And eventually that led to the Hume-Adams Agreement. And you must remember when that became public, that John Hume had to get on a plane and get out of the country because he was being demonised.
Oh yeah, like the risk you took even looking at somebody, let alone talking to them or meeting secretly, was massive risk politically and otherwise. Yeah.
It was, and shamefully the political establishment in this state contributed to it, and they contributed by the demonisation of people like myself. That's fair enough, but you know what I mean, the demonisation of John Hume, the demonisation of Gerry Adams, two peace-loving people, and people who were absolutely, totally committed to finding a resolution to it. And eventually, thankfully, all of that reduced, and people came around. You had the likes of Albert Reynolds, who was a person that played a huge role in it. Bertie Ahern, he came into his shoes, and he continued it. And all of that helped to bring us to where we are. It was a long journey, but it was a painful journey for many, but it was... I have to give credit to John Hume and not just to John, to everybody else, because everybody took risk on this, and we are where we are because people were prepared to take risks.
Did it have its own momentum when you were in for 2 days, the final 2 days, after all the work that had happened, after all the concern it might fall apart? That did you know inside those rooms that the world was waiting and expecting outside? Did that create its own momentum to say, look, let's just get this over the line?
Certainly, yes. Like, there was no certainties going in, and you were going in, and you were going in with your bottom line. Obviously, I assume every party had a bottom line, and you were trying to say, can you negotiate from that up? You can negotiate from that back, because from our perspective, like, we had to go back to the wider membership of the Republican Movement right across the island and beyond the island. We had the prisoners. I went into every single prison in England and in Ireland to brief the prisoners on the Good Friday Agreement afterwards, and to convince them that it was the best way forward. And to assure them there was no sellout on what we stood for. Obviously, all the Sinn Féin leadership had to travel to every single common in the country and deal with that. And we'd done that. And you must remember that the day the Good Friday Agreement was signed, Sinn Féin was the only party that didn't sign up to it, because we went back to our membership. We were very conscious of what happened in 1921 from Collins and Michael Collins and his team when they signed up and then came back and the whole thing split. But like, we had to ensure that wouldn't happen, and we thankfully we were able to do that. We went around by day and night for weeks to convince people, and then to convince people about when the referendum came up to vote for the referendum and support the referendum. I know people that are very very supportive of the whole thing now, Sinn Féin people that didn't vote yes to the Good Friday Agreement and the referendum, and it took time to come around, and they did come around, to their credit.
What do you say about the role of Dick Spring and Gareth Fitzgerald, the previous governments, in getting us along the road?
Well, they all played their part, and I always acknowledge the role that they played. If people have been honest here, this goes back to Charlie High. And a contact from Haughey to one of his name escapes me now, he's from Tipperary, South Tipperary, he had contact with Sinn Féin, and that he passed that on to Albert Reynolds, and then it went along the line that way. So it went back that far. You know, there was back channel, all back channel communications were ongoing to try and find some way sounding out each other, find out what can be bring a resolution to this. And there was obstacles on the way. There was people that didn't support it, that were in the political, prominent political people that didn't support it, and we'd done everything they could to scupper it. But thankfully, comments with the likes of, I suppose, Albert Reynolds really took it to a new level when he, with the profile that he gave it, and went out and shook hands with Gerry Adams publicly, and he didn't lock people out or demonise people. He was prepared to do that. And Bertie Ahern, to his credit, and obviously you had Tony Blair in England and Bill Clinton in America, and that when you create a framework where you have very committed, respected people, irrespective of their backgrounds, irrespective of what side they were on, were prepared to take that risk. That was the example that was set, and that was the example that delivered.
Yeah. I suppose on that risk, it had fallen many times before. And I know you say, look, some politicians would have demonised and would have been very critical, but they probably would have been burned before in trying to talk to somebody or do something. Then another bomb goes off and all of a sudden you're left looking like you're a fool or you shouldn't be talking to these people as long as they're committed to violence.
Well, how do you resolve something? We have at the moment, we have one of the worst wars since the Second World War in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And that will eventually sit, they'll have to sit down and talk and negotiate. That's going to be the outcome of it. And the longer you delay that, and then the further you push that out,
the more damage gets done.
The more damage gets done. And, this, the, and it, it creates more difficult for healing. Like, the war in the north lasted 30 years practically. You know, it, and it's like in 72, I remember 72. I remember Seamus Toomey in 72, who was chief of staff at the IRA, when Lyllis burned out a nationalist estate and the ceasefire broke down. When Whitelaw took an IRA delegation to London to meet with him, you know. And so all of that, chances were there, but they was never able to deliver. Maybe you didn't have the experience on the Republican side at leadership level that time, and maybe you didn't have the commitment from a British side at that time. They believed that there was a military solution to it. There was never going to be a military solution where you had a strong IRA supported by a significant number of people. So there was never going to be a solution, only a negotiated solution.
Yeah. Speaking of that, Martin, when you look at things now, there are problems. We have Stormont still in abeyance. We have political problems. We have an issue of the, you know, things not up and running a long time, rows over flags and symbolism. Do you look at it from the point of view of disappointment on that front, or do you look, at least that's better than bombing and killing?
I think you've just said it.
As bad as it is.
I think you've just said it there. It's better than bombing and killing. And all of that can be resolved. And even in the flashpoints, quite substantial progress has been made on that. Where you have committed, dedicated people on both sides of the sectarian divide that are prepared to help each other to resolve that. Like, I have one personal disappointment. I was hoping for probably a far more advanced stage where we have integrated education between non-sectarian education. That's what I was hoping for. That is me. To me, hasn't moved as fast as I would like it, but it will. I know it will. So, like, you know, we just got to remain committed to it. Regarding the institutions being broken down at the moment, again, like, that will be fixed. I know it will be fixed. It'll probably take a bit of time, but it will be fixed. And you know, we would be hoping that Ricky Sunak would be able to persuade the DUP that there's no threat to them to be in the framework and be part of the people that are letting down there is their own people, and letting down the people right across the whole spectrum in the six counties. And hopefully that that will be resolved pretty soon.
Yeah. Look, a listener gets in touch and says, look, Dick Spring played an integral role with Gareth Fitzgerald in the Anglo-Irish Agreement. This person feels a lot of things have changed in 25 years, noticeably the Nice and Lisbon referendums. What was all the fighting needed back then when we're now living in a multicultural society? Sinn Féin should have done more at the time of the Nice referendum. When we were forced to vote a second time, it was very unjust. It undermined all these people who spent their lives working for their country. Ireland's totally changed. We've sold out our country. Now, look, that's a different debate, I suppose, for a different day, Martin, but what's your response to that point?
Well, yeah, you know, the referendums, it's a democratic process, and people make a judgment call. I think there was two referendums that were run a second time in
yes.
Yeah, two were run the second time. And on each occasion when they were run the second time, there was improvements made to the content of what was in those referendums to the advantage of the people. And you can argue it both ways. But in my opinion, the second running of those referendums, it benefited the Irish people. So, you know, you can have, the other people might have a different view. Regarding the what was it all for and the length of it? Well, I was 18 years old in 1970, 1969, 1968, when one man, one vote was being denied to a person because they were Catholic and because they didn't own property, which they couldn't own because economically they were being relegated and they weren't in a position to own property. And that continued right through from partition of the country and under the auspices of the British government and silently supported by the Dublin government. So, like, you know, it was inevitable there was going to be conflict when poverty and people had no hope, and then there forms a civil rights movement and it's beaten off the streets. It was inevitable it was going to lead to conflict, and it did. And that's why I joined the IRA. I joined the IRA in 1970 because what I saw, I was able to see on television. And from that day on until I came out of prison in 1994, I contributed to that struggle. And when I came out in 1994, 11 days after the cessation, the first cessation, I immediately saw an opportunity and was encouraged by the likes of Gerry and Martin, who were senior Sinn Féin people, to become involved politically and trying to find a resolution to it. And I and others have done that to the best of our ability, or limited ability maybe. You know, but we've done our best. And looking back, and I wish there had been no conflict. I wish there had been no reason for conflict, but it happened, and we are now where we are.
Where we are. We've brought it to an end, thank God. Yeah. 25 years on, Martin. Listen, we're out of time, but thanks very much for taking time and giving us your memories of 25 years ago, and thanks for talking to me this morning.
Thank you very much.